Hello, welcome to Values, Virtues, Ethics and Morality. I am Magla Pillay and I'd like to introduce to you what I hope now is a familiar face, Sister Denise, who's been practicing Raja Yoga meditation with the Brahma Kumaris for several decades. Today's topic is particularly interesting to me and it's entitled very simply, Social Conditioning. It fits into the theme of this show because we look at the ways in which we have become socialized to becoming what we are rather than being true to the original self. In this show, we ask you to take a look at your inner world to see whether who you are on the inside and what you are on the inside is the same as what you are on the outside and whether who you have become as an individual is working for you. We ask you to particularly look at your conscience and the state of your conscience and whether, like a lot of people on the planet, you ignore it a lot of the time. So on that note, we say a very warm welcome to Sister Denise. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Magla.
So tell me, social conditioning, what does that mean? It's a very unusual term.
When a person is born or about to be born, and nowadays you have the scientific system of being able to see inside a womb to see what it is, but otherwise, you know, as soon as a baby is born, the question is, what is it? And so people think of a baby as an object, which is a possession, and that they therefore have this thing and they can do what they want. They never ask the question, who is it? They never think that they are trustees of a being and that they have responsibilities. I mean, some people do, but more and more people just think, well, I've got something and I can use it for my own convenience. And mix that with a lot of social ideas that says that, you know, if you are kind and nice to a child, you're spoiling it. And so people are encouraged to be abusive and aggressive and often violent to children in the name of, you know, giving the child a conscience, teaching the child certain things, and it has really become quite abusive. A lot of parenting practices are that. So this is where your social conditioning starts. You belong to me. You do what I say. You are who I tell you to be. And if I tell you to be something, to not be something, then you have no right to be that. So, you know, a child really is seen as an object who doesn't have any rights. And then at some point that child hits 18 and then they're an adult and they start having rights. It's just completely artificial. So what spirituality says is, look, this child was an adult, has come into your life, it's a soul in a very small body. You have a responsibility to care for, as a trustee, this human being who you don't know, and you will gradually discover the characteristics, the personality and so on. People absolutely do not see it like that, you see. And so, therefore, this conditioning will be according to preconceptions, ideas, selfish motives, and so on, so that the conditioning will actually, in many ways, damage a person quite a lot. And then people will have behavior patterns that are the result of the conditioning, but they will be blamed and it will be said, well, you are like this, you see. And because people don't know the intricacies of it, can't argue against it. Mm. And this is why there's so much chaos in families today.
Yeah. Is it, Denise? It's common phenomena to see one person who's born into a religion, whether he's 17 or 27, decide to become part of another religion. And it's a huge problem for the family from which he emerges. Why is that? Why are people not allowed to make their own decisions, especially when they're adults? What is it that causes people to be so prescriptive about others' conduct?
I think partly it's because of seeing the person as an object who is the property of the father or the village or the town or the country or the religion, you know. Mm-hmm. And there are people who interpret religion to mean our religion is as strong as, or the strength of our religion is how many people we have. So if somebody wants to go to another religion, that's considered a traitor.
Mm,
and they're treated as someone who has betrayed their country or betrayed God, and so there'll be brutal repercussions.
Yeah. It's so odd that a lot of people make career choices based on what other people think they should become. And I find this so bizarre because it's one's entire life.
Well, people are so used to this conditioning, and they're told from the get-go that, okay, this is what you are, this is who you are, and this is the future that's laid out for you, no ifs, ands, or buts. That's it, you know, mm-hmm. And you do not have any right to question it. And this will be pushed into a person's mind to such an extent that you either accept it or we destroy you. And so they accept it.
Okay. Now, what is it within the mind that causes one to, well, kind of easily sacrifice one's individuality? I think one's individuality is what makes one human. They're willing to say, ah, my parents love me, so I'll go along with what they say, because it worked for them, worked for my brother and my sisters, so it would work for me.
But at the same time, there are many people who really feel that they are, maybe they call themselves misfits, or they don't know how come they got born into this family, because they don't seem to have anything in common, and they will feel very different. And because of feeling very different, when the family or the community says this and this is what's laid out for you, they may feel that they have a different destiny, you know.
Mm.
And when they feel the power of a destiny like that, that can actually counteract the power of the social conditioning.
Yeah.
But because it's very much on the inside, sometimes you may have difficulty capturing it. But at the same time, you know, you have a destiny, and circumstances will push you towards your destiny, and there may be a big conflict with your people that you got born into, or there may not be. You know, there are some people whose bondage, whose karmic bondage with the birth family is very light, and that family doesn't hold them to it. They will say sometimes, you don't belong to us, the quicker you go, the better. Mm. And that may be harsh, it may be hurtful, but at the same time, it allows that person to be free to get on with their destiny.
Okay. And if one is carrying on one's shoulders a lifetime of being told what you are, this and not this, for God's sake, don't even think of studying art at university, because you need to eat, so go study medicine or something so that you can get at least an income from it and you won't be a burden to us. How do you reclaim your lost individuality? Is it possible? Is it possible? Does the real you, you know, the part, you see, the way you describe it, social conditioning is something that happens on the outside. Does the part of you that's real, does it die, become dormant, is eradicated? What happens to that?
There was a very beautiful study of this in a film called The Dead Poets Society, a very famous film.
Robin Williams.
I think so.
Yeah.
And this young boy was very interested in being an actor and so on, but his father, no, you are going to be a lawyer. I forgot exactly what it was. And eventually, you know, that boy killed himself because it was so awful. And of course, when such a tragedy strikes in a family, then of course the people have to look at, you know, how did this happen? You know, how was I implicated? What did I do to cause my son to kill himself? You know, and unfortunately, sometimes it takes a really big tragedy for a person to wake up and see that the way they think everything should go goes tragically and dramatically wrong, and it's too late, you know.
Mm.
So I think the value of having these kinds of exposés of these situations is that people can see, okay, if you carry on down this path, this is what's going to happen, so pay attention, you know. So it's a really powerful message, and almost like preventative social medicine. And I think the artists in a society...
Preventative social medicine. Before you answer the rest of the question, please tell us, what on earth is preventative social medicine? I've never heard of that, and neither have you, if you're being honest. What is that? Preventative social medicine.
Well, it's...
That's a thing.
It's a thing.
Okay. Do tell us about the thing.
Well, it's a description of, if you carry on going down this road, this is what's going to happen. So better wake up and stop going down this road. And the road is a social catastrophe. And so when you get a message that says, you know, carry on down this road and it will be a big tragedy, better, you know, look at some alternatives and get a little bit more in touch with what it means to be a human being and what are the rights of the individuals in a family setting and what are the spiritual laws that are connected with all that, and go with the laws of spirituality, not against them, if you want to experience any kind of success. Because that tragedy is a social disease, you see. So if you can have these kinds of descriptions, then it's preventative.
Mm. Well, that was quite an earful, I must say, Sister Denise, in a sweet way. So when you reach adulthood, and decisions were made for you throughout your life, and you were told to go this way and not that way, do you wake up one day and say, you know, I'm now choosing a different path, I've got to listen to my own heart?
I'll give you an example. This happens to a lot of girls. Your parents will say, okay, you know, at this age you're going to get married, we're going to find a husband for you, and you will be happily ever after, have so-so number of children, and your husband will have this type of, you know, profession, and it's all laid out for you. And if it happens that is rudely interrupted by an accident or a divorce or something, then all of these promises that were told to you, they're shown to be false. And then either you have to say, the people who made these promises to you, your parents in particular, betrayed you, and you may have such a powerful loyalty that you refuse to call them on that, then you will blame God or circumstances or society, but you will refuse to look at the other flaws that contributed to you being in this situation, and then you just will not open your eyes. And I've seen people do that, and then you get a lot of bitterness and character defects connected with that, because you wouldn't take a look.
Mm. So Denise, how does one know that you're living a life that other people decided for you, or that you're living your own life? Because with some people, their own inner voice has been obliterated by social conditioning. How do you find that lost voice?
There's always going to be something which will tell you that inner voice is there, even if it's a really tiny little thing. Because there are things that happen in your life where your heart goes there. And then these other people will say, well, your heart has no validity, don't even think of following it. They crush your heart. So then you experience the pain of that. And then when things go wrong, then the heart says, told you so. And then you feel this terrible regret that I went against my heart and it's too late, there's nothing I could do. So there you go into this bitterness.
There's negative feelings, a manner in which you realize that you're on the wrong track.
Well, it just never feels right. You're never able to really enjoy. You're never able to be really real. You're never able to be really happy. Everything is one fake thing on top of another, on top of another. And things start to get progressively dysfunctional.
God, how do you bring him into your journey to remove all of the layers that's on top of you and bring him into this space?
There is an expression that we use in spiritual practice of Raj Yoga. We talk about Srimat, Manmat, Parmat.
Mm-hmm.
Mat being ideology, directives, force in your life. Srimat means the pure force, and it also is, you know, that like the voice of God. Parmat is the voice of other people, the voice of society.
Social conditioning.
And then Manmat is that you have internalized that social conditioning to such an extent that you think that that is your heart, you know. And so that you have suppressed the voice of your heart, the voice of God. The person whose heart is nurtured by the feeling of love for God, which has that authenticity and that power, that inner light, will find itself up against the outside, that which is not real. And it's powerful enough to say, I'm going this way, and that's too bad. You know, so there are people, but then always you're finding yourself up against these obstructions, and then you have to become essentially someone who overpowers the obstacles one after another. And in that way you actually come into your own, and you start to be your own person, which is really one of the main goals of human life.
So Denise, what is the effect of Manmat and Parmat on a human soul? That you described it by definition, but what is its effect? Does it you're saying it's not good for the soul to go in those directions?
It's not good because the other people will direct you in such a way that it suits them, and it may not be in your best interests. In fact, usually it's not in your best interests. A person who is guiding someone must also listen to that person so that they're not imposing or enforcing their selfish desires, because as soon as they do that, then they are being abusive. And the difficulty is that people are very convinced that what they think is valid and justified, and because the other one doesn't have much value, so your selfish desires are somehow justifiable and must be good for the other person because they're good for you. And then the person starts to internalize that because of this relentless propaganda, as it were. And then that person is living against themselves.
Okay, that's a very interesting expression, to live against yourself. Tell me, the way we function as human beings is that when your voice in your head tells you to do something, we usually go ahead and do it. Now you're saying manmat is not necessarily that which is good for you. There's an energy within the self that's acting against your own interest.
Yes, because when you've internalized the external voice, it displaces the conscience, you cast doubt on your inner voice, and you become this sort of moralizing inner person who is not good for the self, but you think that that is the self, and that's a tragedy.
So I know the vast majority of us trust the voice in the head because it's in your head, and you are saying that this is dangerous.
Well, especially you can see it when there's a discrepancy between the head and the heart.
Yeah.
So when the head and the heart are talking to each other, working together, listening to each other, then you have this beautiful balance of personal discipline and clarity combined with sensitivity. And they work together and the person blossoms like a beautiful rose.
That's a lovely image. Take us through how karma fits into these three things that you just described. Manmat, panmat, srimat, those three things.
Everybody has karmic bondages when they come in, because we are seeing in the Brahma Kumaris that we are at the end of a time cycle. And according to the principles of the time cycle, as time has gone on, you're getting more and more karmic bondages, karmic accounts, and these predispose you to come under the influence of other people, and then the karmic chains actually get amplified. And so a person comes under the influence of someone else through different karmas, and then they're not free to be their own self. So then you need to really take that help from God, the energy of God, to come out of those traps.
It's interesting that it somehow all comes back to the conscience.
Yes.
So it all comes back there. Why is that so key, Denise, in everything? Why do all roads lead to the conscience?
Because the conscience is the voice of the authentic self. And
oh, that is so nice. Because I'm like, the conscience is your internal judge. Not. So it's not someone saying, do this and don't do that. It's not that. It's the voice of the authentic self. Okay.
Because the authentic self...
Okay, sorry, you are aware that many people will be surprised to hear your definition.
Maybe.
Okay, so you have to say that again because I interrupted you. The conscience is...
The conscience is the voice of the authentic self.
Yeah, that is seriously exquisite. Yeah, go on.
So at any cost, we must not go against that, because by going against that, we are giving away our power and we are surrendering ourselves as slaves to be used however anybody wants to use us. Mm. And that is absolute betrayal and abandonment of the self. But society kind of wants us to do that, because basically the world we live in, which is a culture of materialism, is also a culture of selfishness, where people who have power want whatever they want and they don't care who has to pay for it. But that is very bad for your karmic accounts, because you will have to pay.
Okay. That was quite a journey. So I, unfortunately, we have to end here, which is a pity, because this conversation can go on for another half an hour. Well, I hope that you have written down that definition. For many years, I, and I think a good number of other people, would have defined the conscience as your internal judge, something that says to you, do this and don't do that. But Sister Denise has given us a very fresh definition of something that we all have called the human conscience, that is the voice of the authentic self. That is very special. What I like about what you just said, Sister Denise, is that the conscience is not punitive. And to many, it has become punitive. That's, I think, one of the reasons why we stop listening to it, because we don't like being punished. Yeah? Okay, mm-hmm. So very, very interesting to listen to that definition. And I hope that you realize that that which Sister Denise says or shares with you is almost like food, and I invite you to dish as much from the buffet of wisdom that you received here today, and chew it further and digest it and see what else you come up with. That which you hear here does not end here. Okay, I hope you get that message very clearly. You can eat some yourself, you can share it with the people around you, you can take it further into your communities, but spread it, because it's so wonderful to hear that which we've always needed to hear about being authentic, about being real, and about not inviting further harm into your own life. So, Sister Denise, thank you so very much. This has been an exceptionally educational half an hour, but what I like about it is that it ends on a note of hope. It ends on such a gentle note. There's no harshness in truth, and there's no harshness in spirituality. So I hope you continue to be kind to yourself. I hope you learn. I hope you grow. And I also hope to see you again for our next episode. Thank you and goodbye.